order a meeting of the House Committee on Environment and Land Use. Good morning, committee. Hope you had a nice weekend. And we'll open a public hearing on Senate Bill 516. Mr.
And David will go get the sign-up sheet. Senate Bill 516A modifies notice requirements related to changes in land use planning requirements. This measure came out of the Senate with a unanimous vote. As far as background goes, state law, the current state law, requires notification of certain proposed and adopted changes to land use planning requirements by the Land Conservation and Development Commission, county governments, city governments, and metropolitan service districts. The statutes contain specific requirements with respect to notice language. What this measure does is revises those requirements by increasing notification time frame to local governments and property owners for final public hearings on proposed rules and ordinances. It clarifies language required in the notice, allows Metro to notify landowners directly, and clarifies the reimbursement from the state to local government for costs associated with notices triggered by commission rule changes. It also allows Metro and the Land Conservation Development Commission, it removes the requirement that they provide notice for pending zone changes before they adopt a new rule or ordinance. Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Committee will raise a small red flag this morning, and that we're going to ask, and this does not happen very often, we're going to ask Mr. Levy, Mr. Tucker, and Mr. Riggs to all come forward at the same time, because they're all in favor of this bill. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Harlan Levy, staff attorney with the Oregon Association of Realtors. Happy to be up here with my friends, Mr. Randy Tucker and Mr. Doug Riggs, to testify in support of Senate Bill 516A.
Step between us, Doug. Little peacemaker.
516A amends the notice required when the state or a local government rezones property. Rezones are defined under current law as a situation when the base zoning classification of property is changed, or when a law, rule, or ordinance limits or prohibits land uses that were previously allowed in the zone. These requirements are derived out of ballot measure 56, which was passed by the voters with overwhelming support in 1998. We have been working with the 1,000 Friends on this bill for quite some time now, because we both of our organizations agree that timely and accurate land use notification is very important. My members are required to give accurate notification to their clients upon the buying and selling of property, and we believe that accurate notification should be forthcoming from governments as well when they do a rezone. We've also been working with the League of Oregon Cities, Associated Oregon Counties, and Metro in order to bring you a bill that we believe constitutes good public policy. The following changes are made by this bill. Number one, it requires that LCDC and Metro provide their notice of rezones before they adopt a new rule or ordinance. This is already required for cities and counties. It also changes the notification language to make it more accurate. The new language more closely tracks the definition of a rezone, which is the triggering event that causes the notice to be mailed. It also clarifies that local governments are entitled to receive their actual reimbursement from the state for costs associated with LCDC-triggered notifications. And finally, Mr. Riggs will speak to this portion of the bill, but it does allow Metro to directly notify landowners without having the need to go through the local jurisdictions within Metro. That will save both time and money for the Metro regional government. So, in conclusion, OAR supports this bill and respectfully requests that you pass it on to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any questions of Mr. Levy? Mr. Tucker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, my name for the record is Randy Tucker, 1000 Friends of Oregon. First, I'd like to begin my testimony by thanking Harlan for the hard work he's put into this bill. We are co-requesters of the bill, but Harlan's done most of the heavy lifting, and appreciate the work he's done on this. And one interest group that Harlan didn't mention that's worked on this bill, that joined us in the discussions and negotiations and had several suggestions, is the Oregon chapter of the American Planning Association, who's also involved and supportive. I'll be brief. Well, three things to say. First of all, I've distributed some clippings and with some testimony attached to the back. Pay no attention to that testimony behind the curtain there in the back. Well, you can pay attention to it. It is testimony from last session that opposed an earlier version. There were sort of competing versions of Measure 56 changes last session that eventually merged into one bill, and that's essentially the bill that you see before you. So the objections raised to House Bill 2733, I believe is the number, and the testimony that you have been addressed in this bill. Mainly, I've distributed this so you can see some of the problems that occurred at the local level because of the nature and language of the notification required by Measure 56. There were two goals that I think the two main goals that this bill addresses and that the proponents of the bill share. One is to move the notice that you'll find described on page one of the bill from after a decision has been made to before a decision has been made. I think we all agree that notice after a decision has been made is not really effective notice. And that the point is to allow citizens to participate in the land use process in a timely and effective fashion. And so one element of Measure 56 had the notice coming sort of too late for citizens to participate. Everyone agreed to move it forward. The other thing is the language of the notices themselves, which we felt was inaccurate and not even-handed. And so the language has been changed in this bill to be, I think, fairer. I didn't get all the way to where 1,000 Friends would have liked it, but I think we ended up in a good middle ground where everyone is comfortable that there's been an improvement, and that people that receive these notices will be more likely to have correct information if they read them carefully, and also not to have unduly inflammatory language in the notices. So with that, I'll stop and see if there are any questions.
Any questions for Mr. Tucker?
Well, Mr. Chair, one last thing. If there are some issues that are raised later in this hearing, Harlan and I might request the opportunity to come back and address those.
Representative Richardson?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Tucker, you said that the changes in the language will make it more accurate for those that read it carefully and less inflammatory. And inflammatory language and statutory in statutes is something I'm not real familiar with. So I've gone through to see where I could see inflammatory language, and I see two places where the language has changed. One where it said will affect this. I'm looking on page 3, line 43, and it says the language coming out of the notice would be will affect the permissible uses of property in your jurisdiction and may reduce the value of subject property, and it's replacing it, and this is a language that's going to a common person, and it says, may change the zoning classification of properties in your jurisdiction and may limit or prohibit land use previously allowed on properties in your jurisdiction. And I don't know if people understand what a jurisdiction really is.
Actually, Mr. Chair, Representative Richardson, that language is not going to citizens, that's going to local governments. Let's find an example of the language that's going to citizens. Look at page, Ellen, correct me if I'm wrong, look at page, say, 5 near the bottom.
Okay.
And there you begin the language, I believe, that's going to be pretty standard throughout this bill. Page 6 has got the main language. Yeah, let's see, at the top.
Mr. Chair, Representative Richardson, if you look at page 6, line 34.
Sure, that's as good as,
yeah. Okay. Will affect the permissible uses of your property and may reduce the value of your property to may change the zoning classification of your property and other properties in the affected zone, limit or prohibit land use as previously allowed on your property and other properties in the affected zone, or affect the value of your property.
May I just comment? There are two elements of the notices that we thought were misleading. One is the idea that if you receive the notice, your property is actually affected. There's difficulty in at the local government level in determining many times exactly what properties would be affected by a given land use change. And I think the sort of poster child example for that was Senate Bill 12, the landslides bill that passed two sessions ago, where Art is much more knowledgeable about Senate Bill 12, he might want to comment, but for instance, I think one of the triggering elements of Senate Bill 12 is the slope of your property. Well, local governments don't have maps that accurately tell them exactly which properties have exactly which slope. So in order to play it safe, they sent out the notices extremely widely. So that we've changed the language throughout this bill from will to may to reflect the idea that it may or may not affect your property, but we're sending you this notice because, you know, we've got to send a notice out and we want to play it safe and make sure that it gets to the broadest possible universe of people that are likely to be affected. The second thing is the idea that it will affect the value of your property. In many cases, that may be completely untrue. It may not, a given regulation may not affect the value of the property of the recipient of this notice, or in fact may not really affect very many people's property at all. It may possibly increase the value of their property, or it may reduce the value of their property. The effect on property value is entirely speculative, and so instead of saying that, you know, having it being one-sided and saying this may reduce the value of your property, we supported just eliminating that and having the language of the that triggers the notice be the language in the notice, but through compromise in the Senate, we agreed to leave in some language addressing the issue of property value, but not suggesting only that it may be reduced. If I may.
Well,
you know, the only reason I bring it up is I work. I work with citizens all the time, with people that don't understand legal jargon, and they get real confused with long sentences, especially those over 15 words, you know.
Right.
And this could have said, may affect the permissible uses of your property and may affect the value of your property, and that they would understand. But when you start using multiple syllable words in a 25 or 30 word sentence, they never get to the period. I mean, it's just confusing to them. And so I just didn't understand why we had to go so complex.
Well, if I may, Mr. Chair, I represent Richardson, and Harlan, correct me if I'm wrong, may change the zoning classification of your property and other properties in the affected zone and limit or prohibit land uses previously allowed on your property. Those are both taken from the triggering language, the language in the bill that says when you have to send a notice. And so that was an agreement last session and continued through to this session that the most accurate way to word the notice was with direct reference to what is causing the notice to be sent. That was the least biased way of saying what's happening, because that's the thing that's happening that's causing the notice to be sent.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Rosenbaum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wanted to ask you about the fiscal impact of this, since it doesn't have a referral to Ways and Means, and my understanding is that the state or DLCD reimburses local government for the cost of sending these notices. So in light of potential budget cuts, how will that play out?
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, Representative Rosenbaum, I don't believe there was a fiscal impact to this bill. And the reason is LCDC is already required to reimburse locals for these costs. The question came when a local government was forced to respond to phone calls generated by notice that was required by LCDC, and they wanted it clear in the statute that they could ask for reimbursement. And I don't believe that legislative fiscal decided that would actually translate into additional costs.
Mr. Levy, there was a, I'm going to interrupt you just for a moment, there was a fiscal that none of, as far as I know, none of the committee members have. Oh, some do, some don't, I guess.
We'll go ahead and get copies.
Ray, would you make sure? Yeah.
I'll go.
I've got my
If I could just follow up, Mr. Chair, and I don't know if the witnesses have seen this, but the last paragraph says DLCD believes the expenditure impact, while indeterminate, will be minimal. If the cost of notices mailed exceeds the amount appropriated for that purpose, then DLCD would need to seek additional general fund and or expenditure limitation from the emergency board.
Madam Chair, Mr. Chair, Representative Rosenbaum.
Good morning, Doug.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. It's still early and I haven't finished my cup of coffee. For the record, Doug Riggs, here representing Metro. We spent quite a bit of time discussing this last session and a little bit of time discussing it this session. In most cases, these notices are already required. So I think that the reason that we think we've got a minimal fiscal impact is that we're already doing what is required under statute. The main goal of the work group was to modify the language so it would concern people more accurately. I mean, people will still be concerned when they get this notice. But what we've seen at Metro is that if you send someone a letter saying your property value is going to be reduced, they're more likely to be very upset about things than if you send them an accurate notice, which gives them an opportunity to do some research. And that, I think, was the goal, one of our main goals in this work group. So I don't think that there should be an additional impact. I mean, Metro, for instance, sent over, I think it was 400,000 notices during our UGB process. And, you know, a number of those were email notices, a number of them were written notices. We're required to do that, and we did that. The number of notices wouldn't be necessarily be any different. It's right. What would be in the notices that would be different in this case.
And Mr. Chair, Representative Rosenbaum, that's just to reiterate, yeah, this bill is intended not to increase the amount of notice. It was to change the wording of the notices and also to change the timing of some of the notices in the bill so that they are more timely from the recipient's point of view, but not to increase the amount of notice.
Any further questions? Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Mr. Honeycutt.
Mr. Chair, let me just say for the record, since I didn't say it, on behalf of Metro, we support this bill. We were in the work group last session. We followed it very closely. We think it's an improvement over existing law. Thanks.
Thank you.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Dave Honeycutt, Oregonians in Action, speaking in opposition to SB 516. Your previous three witnesses weren't here in 1997, at least not in the capacities that they were, that they are now, when House Bill 2515, which created the notice provisions, came out of both the House Water and, I think it was Water and Land Use Committee at the time, and the Senate Water and Land Use Committee, after hours and hours and hours of contentious debate. We led the charge for passage of House Bill 2515. It came out on both the House and Senate side with bipartisan support, and again spent hours, which I think is sort of highlights one of it, at least from a political standpoint, not addressing the merits of the bill. Something that's inexcusable. As Mr. Levy indicated, they formed a work group to work on the language to essentially a bill that we spent our entire 1997 session running through with the help of many fine former colleagues of yours, and then ran the measure when the bill got out onto the ballot. Because the bill was referred to the voters via a potential threat of veto by the governor. We ran the measure for that. As Mr. Levy indicated, they formed a work group, but they never invited us, which, given our work on that bill, I think is inexcusable. Let me get in a little bit into the politics of the fiscal. Because I think the fact that this has no fiscal or minimal fiscal impact, I also think it's odd. When we ran this bill through originally in its original version in 1997, we didn't have any language for the notice. And we also thought that the appropriate time to send the notice when the state was going to pass a regulation the Land Conservation Development Commission was prior to the time of the initial public hearing. So prior to LCDC holding hearings on an administrative rule change, they would then send a notice out. The commission or the department came in at that point and objected, and I believe we had a $17 million fiscal. Their objection being, we can't send the notice out that early because when we have an initial proposed rule, there'll be a huge category of people that we'll send a notice to. Of course, as the rule gets narrowed over time and we hold successive public hearings on it, then the people that would be affected presumably will narrow, and by the time that we adopt the rule, we'll actually know exactly who it applies to, and so it would be much cheaper for us to send the notice after the rule is adopted, when we know the universe of people to whom it applies to, rather than prior to the time that we adopt the rule, when the rule may be much broader than it would be in its final form. And so the idea now that this bill has no fiscal strikes me as somewhat odd, because in 1997 that was one of the reasons, at least one of the reasons given for it, the bill having a huge fiscal impact. So I guess that's the politics of the fiscal impact statement, something I've learned over my time in the legislature happens all the time. The key to this notice provision, and by the way, the House Bill 2515, which became Measure 56, passed 81-19. I believe it was the biggest yet margin of victory for an approval of a measure that I can recall. The gas tax was defeated, I think 88-12, but that was a defeat. This bill actually passed 81-19. And so we thought, obviously, the public supports the idea of notice. The problem I have with the bill is the tinkering with the idea that the current language. That the rule will affect the permissible uses of your property and may reduce the value of your property. The idea that they're tinkering with that strikes me as somewhat odd. If you look at the language on page 7, lines 7 and 8, that's really the triggering mechanism for when the notice goes out. The notice goes out in two circumstances. Number one, when the base zoning classification of the property has changed, and number two, when the local government or LCDC adopts or amends a ordinance or an administrative rule in a manner that limits or prohibits is the key land uses previously allowed in the affected zone. What I'd love to see, and what we tried to get at in 1997, is the idea that the only time that we cared that notice went out is when your property was being devalued. Now, we spent hours working with various interest groups, with representatives from all the interest groups that you heard. We spent hours with them trying to figure out a way to determine with accuracy when a proposed ordinance would limit the value of your property, because it's our belief that if the ordinance isn't limiting the value of your property, then you can receive your notice. Then the current forms of notice, the forms before Measure 56, were fine. If somebody was interested enough in the land use system to appear and testify on behalf of an ordinance that had no direct impact on their value of their property, that's great. We ought to try and figure out ways to encourage that. But the problem that we were trying to fix, and we heard this over and over and over again, was people that came up and had the value of their property taken from them as a result of changes in the rules, and the last thing they said is, and they didn't bother to notify me. That was the goal. That was what was trying to be fixed with House Bill 2515. Now, if the two situations that notice is required are those where, number one, they change the base zoning of classification of your property, let's say it goes from rural residential to exclusive farm use, or two, when they adopted or amended an ordinance in a manner that limits or prohibits the land uses previously allowed in the affected zone, then I think the language is entirely accurate. The current language, it doesn't say it will reduce the value of your property, it says it may. it may reduce the value of your property. And like I said earlier, originally we didn't impose any requirement, notice any language requirement for the local governments or DLCD. They could write whatever they wanted in their notice. But they came in 1997 and said that they would spend thousands of hours trying to sit down and try and determine what to write in their notice. And so they were, and so they asked the committee to prepare a language for them. Which is exactly what happened, and which is exactly what appears in this bill. I don't believe that if you adopt or amend an ordinance or an LCDC rule in a manner that limits or prohibits land uses previously allowed in the affected zone, that you will increase the value of your property. If they're taking away something that you can do with your property, that won't increase its value. Now, it may not decrease it, but that's why the language in the notice section says it may decrease the value. But it certainly won't increase it. If it would increase it, you wouldn't be doing it in the first place. So, I think the language is entirely accurate. Obviously, the voters agree, or at least they agree with the concept. The measure passed 81-19, and frankly, we opposed this bill and were able to stop this bill in the last session. It's the same thing. It's tremendously frustrating that I have to come up here and testify against the bill when I wasn't even invited to the work group, the original work group, on a bill on a measure that we think of as a real victory for both the property rights movement and for landowners throughout the state. With that, I'd be more than happy to answer any questions.
Representative Rosenbaum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dave, could you respond to the previous panel's comments that they don't think it'll have an increased fiscal impact because we're already sending these notices?
Chair Garrod, Representative Rosenbaum, the notices go out, but right under current law, the notices go out after LCDC adopts an administrative rule. Now, it's been my experience, and it may not be this way all the time, but it's been my experience that when LCDC goes through its rulemaking process, the initial rule is fairly broad and would conceivably apply to a large group of landowners. As the rule goes through its process and they hold public hearings and they take testimony from interested affected groups and citizens and things like that, the proposed rule becomes progressively narrowed. And so the pool of people who would then receive the notice becomes progressively narrower, smaller, which obviously would result in a lower cost. I have no problem with sending out the notice at the front end, at the time before LCDC holds its initial public hearing. The goal of Measure 56 was to notify and get people involved. I have no problem involving them at the front end of the process. We tried to do that in 1997, but the irony is when we tried to do that in 1997, representatives of the, I believe it was the DLCD, came in and said, if we send out the notice at that point, we're going to notify people who, by the time the rule is finished, will be cut out of the process. Their properties won't be affected. So we'll be wasting money on sending notices to people whose property won't be affected, and therefore we've got a much bigger fiscal because we're sending out a lot more notices. I think that's accurate. I don't have a problem with that, but it just strikes me as odd that there's no fiscal on this measure when in 1997 that was an argument that there'd be a huge fiscal on this, on that, what at that point was House Bill 2515.
Seeing no other questions, thank you, Dave.
Thank you.
Larry George.
Chair, members of the committee, thank you so much for the opportunity to come speak. I'm Larry George. I'm the co-owner of George Packing Company, a hazelnut processing company located in Newburg, Oregon. I'm the former executive director of Oregonians in Action, the nation's largest landowner association. And I had the privilege of being involved in the land use debate, if you can call it that, for the last 10 years, and they've seen a lot of, politically loaded terms come through, and I'm going to discuss that towards the end of my testimony. But when we worked on ballot measure, what ended up being ballot measure 56, the work group process was probably one of the most thorough work group processes I've ever been through. We met in a very large meeting with a lot of interest groups up in the Democratic House Caucus office out in front of the House floor, and we went through weeks and weeks of discussion and debate about this. Understand the realtors at the time had been working on a notice requirement for over 10 years, and it was a number one priority for them, and they really sold us on this idea. And let me explain to you what it's like to be on the receiving end of phone calls every single day from landowners across the state. Every single day I receive a phone call from somebody who found out that they can't do something reasonable on their property. And they can discuss with me why it's miszoned or why something that's not a wetland is classified as a wetland. There's all these mistakes made. And they said, you know what, this all could have been solved if I would have known up front. And they didn't even bother to notify me. And I've heard that literally thousands of times in my 10 years. And so it became a huge priority for Oregonians in Action to deal with this issue of notice. And so we sat down and tried to work with the interest groups. What we found is there's a number of interest groups who do not want landowners involved in the process up front, which I think is a huge tragedy, because goal number one of Oregon's land use planning system is citizen involvement. And one of the biggest frustrations is the citizens who are most affected by land use regulations are the people who own the property. And we have taken polls where 80% of the public believes that the government can't change the regulations on your property and devalue your property without being compensated. That's about 70 to 80% of the public believes that's current law. And with the passage of ballot measure 7, I'm sure there's even more people that think that's the current law. But the fact is that most people who own property do not realize that government can come in, and prior to 1998, come in without notifying you, change the zoning, devalue your land, and never involve you in the process. I mean, that boggles people's mind that happened. And we had 20 years of Oregon's land use planning system where that happened on a daily basis. And people say, well, why are there so many mistakes with Oregon's land use system? It's because landowners weren't involved to correct problems early on. I think one of the huge successes over the last 10 years has been the passage of ballot measure 56. And the reason why is because what we're starting to see is that landowners' frustrations and disagreements or problems are front-loaded in the process, meaning they show up and they participate in the upfront process. I think long-term this is going to save an immense amount of cost to the state, because right now we have a special court called Land Use Board of Appeals that handles nothing but land use cases because it is such a bureaucratic mess for landowners to get through. And I think that by front-loading this and involving landowners, what you'll see is that you'll see a process that is solved up front. Problems are solved in the beginning. On the language, and my objections to the passage about Senate Bill 516 comes down to the changing of the language. I think one of the reasons why ballot measure 56 has been successful is because it's very simple and explains to people what the problem is. Your regulations may be changed, or you will be changed, and it may reduce your property values. That puts it out there for people. It's simple. It's easy for people to understand. They participate in the process. Early on, right after the passage of ballot measure 56, you had a few jurisdictions that basically that's all they sent out. And what ended up happening was that people showed up who maybe weren't as affected as they thought they were. And so what local jurisdictions have done is added information. They've increased the amount of information that they send. The basic still framework of ballot measure 56 notifies people that they need to pay attention, and then the detail of the information goes through. And what we've seen is an evening out of the process as both local governments and landowners become familiar with the notice requirements in the state. I look at this language, and it's really frustrating. And here's what's frustrating about Oregon's land use planning system. The whole thing is packed with loaded terms. Exclusive farm use zone and forest use zones. 97% of the entire state is zoned either exclusive farm or forest. 97%.
Larry, we have been hearing this for 4 months. If you could keep your comments to the bill, I would appreciate that.
I guess my point is that when I look at Senate Bill 516, is that this is very objective language that came up in a work group with all kinds of different interests around the table. And it says, the ordinance will affect the permissible uses on your property and may reduce the value of your property. completely accurate. If this committee wants to deal with the politically loaded terms, I am more than willing to serve on a work group about the politically loaded terms in Oregon's land use planning process. More than willing to try to take all of those out of the process. But I don't view ballot measure 56 as fitting in that category, because it's accurate, and we sat through a working group, and it's incredibly frustrating to have to leave my operation to come down here to discuss something that I feel is a political attempt to try to reduce the participation of landowners in the process. Because if landowners aren't fully notified, what we're going to go back to is the old system where people are going to get some notice that is gobbledygook, and they're not going to understand what it means to them. They're going to throw it away, and 2 or 3 years when they have to deal with the process, they're going to say, I never got notified, because they didn't remember the notification. And it's one of the beauties about Measure 56, because I think it's worked. And I think it's worked well. It's worked well for local governments. It's worked well for the landowners. And it's making the system better. I appreciate your allowing me to have a little latitude with my comments, Representative. But I think there's a great deal of frustration, because I really felt like we solved this back in the 1997 session with a very extensive work group. And I even took criticism at the time for selling out, I guess, from some of the same groups that are advocating for this. Is it staff from some of the same groups said, you guys are going too soft on this language, we need to make this language harder. And our point was is that we wanted to make language that worked, that was accurate, and worked for the entire system. And I think we did that. I think it's been a success, and I think the voters approved it, and I think it's worked since then. And I appreciate it. I don't have any comments or questions.
Any questions of Mr. Jones? Larry, did you testify on the Senate side on this bill?
I was notified that this bill even existed last Wednesday. And so I talked to Senator Farioli when I first got back from my trip in March and said, I heard that there's a bill dealing with notification. And he gave me the indication that I didn't know what bill it was. And he said, gave me the indication that nothing was moving on that front. So, and maybe I just miscommunicated with Senator Farioli on the issue. I wasn't aware of the bill number. And I got a call from Dave Honeycutt about coming down here and explaining to him from my perspective what happened back in the 1997 session. So I was not informed. And during my tenure at Oregon's in Action, which ended in the end of November, I was not notified that either the Real Truth or 1,000 Friends of Oregon was going to go forward with this bill to change something that we spent so much time, energy, and money pushing forward, both through the legislative process and on the ballot.
Do you have an opinion of why this would have passed the Senate with a unanimous vote?
All I can say is that I was not notified that this bill was moving forward. I'm not. I buy and sell hazelnuts now, Representative. So, my point is this: is that I am assuming that at least from my perspective as a private citizen, I was not given the opportunity on something that I care very deeply about and I worked a long time on to either was notified that the bill was moving through or that there was any attempt to undo parts of ballot measure 56.
Chair. Representative Greenlee.
Good morning, Mr. George. I just wanted to check on something you said. And I thought I heard you say that the realtors were moving this bill in order to reduce citizen participation. It sounded like I heard that. Do you think that's why they're so involved in this? Because
Chair, Representative Greenlee, let me, after 10 years of the land use process, I'm pretty jaded, which is one of the reasons why I left. So please take my comments in the context of my admission that I'm a bit jaded. I believe that every interest group in the land use process wants their members to participate and nobody else. And that serves different advantages. Oregonians in Action that I represented small individual property owners. Home builders represent big landowners. Realtors represent people who sell real estate. 1,000 Friends represent people who already have theirs. So what we have is a situation where everybody wants their members to be there and testify, and it's not as important to have other groups as members there. I have my own beliefs on why the realtors would move this legislation. I have no idea why they would do it without notifying me or at least keeping me informed while I was either at Oregonians in Action, because it had to be in drafting stages at that point, or since I've been back, because they know how much I care about this issue and how hard I worked on it. So you can interpret what I'm saying however you want, except that I will tell you that citizen involvement is the only way. We could have fixed so many problems had we had correct citizen involvement in the beginning. We wouldn't have anywhere near the problems we have today in the land use process. But we have them. And I don't think we should go back and repeat problems. And I think that probably the group that has been most harmed and damaged are small individual rural landowners around the state, because they were not involved early on. And that's who I care about, and that's who I want to show up. And I understand the realtors have their own interest, and the people who they care about participate, and I hope they do participate, but it's not the same people that I represented during my tenure at Oregonians in Action.
Thank you, sir.
Mr. Chair, and Mr. George, I'm hearing a number of things. First of all, I understand that you feel kind of bad that you didn't get invited to the dance. And that's understandable. But as we focus on this bill, I'm hearing two things. One is that there are multiple provisions that are being dealt with in this bill, but that you are focused on a couple of the language changes that you feel obfuscate the notice requirements to the citizens. And I am concerned about that as well. I just counted, and this one sentence is 69 words. And, I mean, that is a very complicated sentence, and it uses terminology that are not defined in most common people's vocabulary. And so is it correct that you're not against the other things that this bill might correct, and if it's going to expand the pool of notice because it's going to be done earlier, that's not a problem to you, but that your main concern is that on the notice wording to the individual citizens, if that were less complicated, then you'd be okay with this bill?
Chair, Representative Richardson, let me... I would like to see the language, and I would urge the committee to leave the language that was passing ballot Measure 56 exactly how it is, because I think it's accurate, and I think it works, and it works for the landowners, and that's who I believe needs to be notified and who has a fair shot at it. The politics of the rest of the bill is this. I think that I think LCDC and the DLCD should be required to notify people up front. I really do. And I don't have any objection to that. What I find interesting is the politics of that. Because back in 1987, when we first proposed this, that was going to cost something like $5 million at the time. And now it's not anything. And so I have no objections. If DLCD is fine with doing it, it's not going to cost me more money, I would just prefer. We had in our original bill that we notified that DLCD was required to notify prior to their administrative rules. No problem with that. My fear is that what I view as a small change is being used to make the language of the other notification as like a carrot and a stick type of thing. We give them this, which I don't view as a huge win for landowners, but it's fine. If you decide to do it, it's good. To make the language of the notice more complex so people throw that notice away. And we all, look, all of us have been involved in the political process. We know that the language of a fundraising letter is really important that you catch the attention. And part of the discussion in the work group was that language catches attention. So all I care about is that the language stays the same that was passed in ballot Measure 56. It's worked. It's working well. And if the committee wants to take out those changes and just have DLCD notify and be prior to the rule writing process, I have no objection to that.
Can I follow up? Can I take that as a yes? And yet there was also wording changes that go to the notice to the jurisdiction or the municipalities. You have no problem with that being more complex, because that's going to people that are in the industry. Your focus would be on merely the language simplicity for that which goes to the citizens.
Representative Richardson, I really didn't read that language part of it, because that was of less concern to me. So, and again, I'm representing myself here, and I have no objection to that. The only thing I'm concerned about is that the language that we currently send to landowners stays the same as passed by the legislature, it went through the working group, and was passed by the voters of the state.
Thank you, Larry.
Appreciate the opportunity to come speak.
Art, could you come up for just a moment to perhaps address the fiscal part as far as the counties are concerned, what your opinion as to whether or not there is a fiscal impact?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was hoping you were running off your earlier list, because I had signed up to testify on this bill. But
That being said, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee, I'm Art Slack. I'm with the Association of Oregon Counties. Let me first address your question, Mr. Chair. As I've viewed the bill, I do not believe it has a fiscal impact on local government at this point. We are required to give notice by the major 56 requirements, and in doing that, our counsel to local governments, to individual counties, is to basically give more notice than less notice, because the provisions of the notice at this point is somewhat general, and our belief is it's good to give notice to as broad a spectrum as possible. And for instance, when it deals with an exclusive farm use zone change at this point, everybody in the exclusive farm use zone gets notice. Not, you don't try and pick out segments of that. So I don't believe it's going to have a significant. I think part of the reason, in response to Representative Rosenbaum's question about DLCD's comments, is that if you'll notice, I'm sorry to use that word at this point, but through the five special sessions, the notice funds in DLCD's budget was reduced and reduced and reduced, and part of that was based on what we've experienced over the last couple of biennium with respect to what the state has spent. Now, I will offer that there has been less administrative rules that would require this notice adopted by LCDC, and at least last session there was not that many pieces of legislation that the legislature brought forth that also would require notification. I think the last significant, as mentioned earlier, was Senate Bill 12. Senate Bill 12 required notice to a very broad list of property owners, and we didn't even know when it was going to be triggered. I mean, you know, the preliminary maps just came out this last fall by Dogami, and we had no idea when we were giving the notice that was required by the legislation in 1999, in the year 2000, who we were noticing. But we sent out the notice to keep faith with the requirements of this measure. So I hope, Mr. Chair, that at least responds to the question about fiscal impact and our views. With regard to the bill itself, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the Association of Oregon Counties supports 516. We believe it's an improvement in the legislation. You've heard a lot of testimony. I will just offer to you that I was part of the work groups in 1997. There were work groups. We spent a lot of hours. There was not consensus by any stretch. We have legislation at this point, and we all accept the legislation that was brought forward and voted on, and we work underneath those requirements. The other thing I would just note for you in terms of history, counties prior to 1997 were required to give notice when they amended their comprehensive plans. That was something that was in the statute much earlier. There was a provision that said that requirement for counties is there, assuming that the legislature provides funding for that notice. Unfortunately, the legislature did it once, and that was the end of it. With Measure 56 now, of course, there is additional funding, and we continue on. But I think it's important to recognize that if you go back into the 80s, counties were providing the kind of notice that you're talking about long before we ever had this measure. And again, Mr. Chair, we support the bill. We think it's an improvement, and we believe it has a minimal fiscal impact at this point.
Any questions for Mr. Slump? Thank you, Art.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
The chair must confess that when he saw the 23-0 vote in the Senate, that I didn't look at the bill perhaps as closely as I should have. So I don't think we're going to vote on this one today. but I do want to give some of the folks out there who have asked for a little bit of rebuttal time, and Dave, you're included in this. So, Harlan, Doug, and I don't know if Randy wants to come up or not, but I think some questions that we weren't, that the chair was not aware of, have been brought up today, and perhaps you can address. And can you keep the rebuttal to about 2 minutes apiece, something like that?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, this is Doug Riggs again with Metro, and I'd be happy to. I think Larry raises some very valid points, and he's right on the first 80% of what he says, and I agree 100%. I mean, no one disagrees with notification. He's exactly right. The voters went to the polls, and I believe ballot measure 64 also failed by an 88-12 margin, so I think there have been a number of them that have failed. But I think what the voters wanted was not only notification, but accurate notification. That's really what I wanted to address here today. You need to understand that I represent Metro councilors, all of whom are elected from the Portland area, metropolitan area, and if we do not provide notice, if we do not tell property owners what we're planning on doing, if we do not involve them in the process, over time, my Metro councilor's credibility begins to erode, and that's something that they do not want to see happen, and that's why we spent quite a bit of time in this last UGB process trying to ensure that people were provided notification. But I think what maybe the fundamental issue here is that there are some groups that want the shock value, and I think that's been a term that's been referred to. They want to shock a property owner into being concerned about something. And in our view, the existing language does just that, but unnecessarily. It shocks someone because it says your property value may be decreased. But I really want to take issue with what Mr. Honeycutt said about he can't conceive of an idea or a situation in which a zoning change or a land use decision would increase property values. Put yourself in the position of someone who owns a country cabin or a golf course home, and a property could be used for a stockyard right next door, and a zoning change is made to prevent that. Or a metro decision is made to expand the UGB, and as a result, property is upzoned and available for development. In those cases, the property could be increased. Now, from Metro's perspective, we wouldn't want to necessarily tell a property owner that his property would be increased in value, because that might not be accurate. But by the same token, on the flip side, we shouldn't be telling that property owner in every single case that his property might be devalued. And so really what I think the work group, which was this session, and I know it was a very open process, we had the work groups down in the cafeteria most of the time, and I thought everyone was invited, and Mr. Honeycutt was at least one of them that I know of. In that discussion, we were trying to figure out how to keep the notification process that the ballot measure required, but also make sure that what people were getting was more accurate. And to me, that's the fundamental thing that this bill does. Nothing more, for the most part. I mean, it changes the dates, it changes when the notice goes out, but for Metro, the most important thing was coming up with a notification procedure that was more accurate. And in some cases, that means that property values will go up, some cases they'll remain neutral, some cases they'll go down. And I feel very strongly about the fact that the language in the bill makes that change to be more accurate. And that's what statute ought to do. Statute should not be in the business of being biased towards one potential outcome or another. The statute ought to be a level playing field, so whoever gets the notice, if we want to be specific, that's a whole other debate, because we have to spend considerably more money and time, and at times as Metro goes through the process, you can't tell if it's going to go up or down, so we want an accurate notice. So I apologize if I took longer than 2 minutes, but I thought it was an important point.
Can I ask a question?
Certainly, Freeman.
Would that have been achieved simply by changing the word reduce to change in the old language? I mean, I'm not sure that would make Dave any happier, but...
Mr. Chair, Representative Greenwood, this language was suggested by the chair of the Senate Water and Land Use Committee, Senator Ferrioli. Originally, the language was less complicated. In the original bill, Senate Bill 516 is introduced. The language you see before you was requested by Senator Ferrioli, and we all agreed, with the exception of Mr. Honeycutt, that we could live with that in the bill.
Mr. Chair, Randy Tucker, it was suggested by the chair after the issue of retaining reference to property value was raised in testimony by Mr. Honeycutt, I believe. Or it was at least it was consistent with his suggestion and testimony.
Mr. Chair, may I read about a few of the items that you heard before you? First of all, we did invite Oregonians in Action to our work group. As a matter of fact, Dave was at every single one of our meetings, all one of them in the cafeteria on this bill. And it was a matter of fact during the last legislative session when it was Oregonians in Action that brought forward the bill, and we were trying to meet on that. It was Mr. Honeycutt that refused to invite Mr. Tucker to that work group, and as a result, those bills did not move out of committee. So that was back in the 90, or excuse me, in the 01 session. And furthermore, I want to talk a little bit about the language changes that you see in this bill. These changes were necessitated because of the fact that the existing language does cause people to become confused and to become inflamed when they receive a notice. And Mr. Riggs raised an excellent example. If you have property that sits outside the urban growth boundary and you get brought into the urban growth boundary, guess what? You get a notification under ballot measure 56 because there was a change in the base of zoning classification of your property. And as a result of that change, your property value was significantly increased because now you can develop your property and subdivide down to whatever the zoning would be within that city. So we don't think it is accurate to tell someone the property value is being reduced when in fact the property value is being increased. If one of my members were to do that, they could be sued for malpractice for giving bad information to their clients. What else? I think with that I will conclude my rebuttal. Randy, do you have anything else you wanted to add?
Yes, just briefly, I have to say I found some of the testimony incredible over the last several minutes prior to our re-arrival at the podium here. First of all, I should note for the record that Senator Gary George voted yes on this bill about 2 weeks ago, almost 2 weeks ago. So at least Larry's father knew about the bill. Second, I think Doug and Harlan adequately addressed the specific substantive issues. I would just like to say for the record that if there was a reference to 1,000 Friends as not wanting citizens involved in the land use process, I'd like to just strongly and emphatically repudiate that. I have been before this committee many times this session, at least a couple times, where I've mentioned goal one of the land use program is citizen participation. It's a very important element of the process for us. We always have supported it and never have tried to exclude people from the process. Thank you.
Any questions of the panel? Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Dave, rebuttal is fair for one, it's fair for all, I guess. So,
Oh, that's bad. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dave Honeycutt, Oregonians in Action. I think this is the rebuttal of the rebuttal. Oregonians in Action never brought this bill forward in the 2001 session. We wouldn't bring a bill like this forward because we don't think the bill is necessary. The only reason that I was invited to the work group over on the Senate side was because Senator Farioli asked all of us to work together. But prior to that, I wasn't invited to any of the work groups. I came in and opposed the bill on the Senate side in the Senate committee, but out of respect for the chair, when the bill came out of committee, and when I came back into committee after the work group had met, the only time that I was invited to participate at the chair's request, I came in and opposed the bill, but said it was better than it was in its original version. And it is. It's still a bad bill, and I still oppose the bill, but out of respect for the chair, I didn't put out a floor letter. So I think that's why the bill came out 23-0 out of the Senate committee. It certainly wasn't because there was consensus on the bill, and as I said in the committee, I opposed the bill, and I still do, and I'd oppose it in the House, and I still am. Regarding the language, the idea that if they prohibit a slaughterhouse next door, that will increase the value of your property, it certainly may be accurate. The only problem is if they place a regulation that prohibits a slaughterhouse next door, you're not entitled to notice. The only time you're entitled to notice is if they place a regulation on your particular property, and if they place a regulation on your particular piece of property that limits or prohibits the uses that you can make on your particular piece of property, I can't think of a situation where that will increase the value. Because if it increases, if it would increase the value, you wouldn't be doing it in the first place. And so the idea, assuming that you're trying to maximize the value of your property, so the idea that saying that the bill will affect the value of your property is inaccurate. The language that's in the existing bill right now is inaccurate because it implies that it could potentially increase, that placing a regulation on your property that limits or prohibits what you can do with it will somehow increase it. I know of no regulation that they can put on my particular piece of property. I'm just speaking as a property owner right now. I know of no regulation that they can put on my property that tell me that I can't do something with my property that would somehow increase its value. And so the current language in the A and Gross version, I think, is inaccurate. And the existing language is accurate.
Any questions of Mr. Honeycutt? Okay, seeing none, thank you.
Thank you.
Well, you promised us about a month ago that you would never testify on another bill again, remember?
Somebody twisted his arm, obviously.
Let me twist my arm. Mr. Chair, I was only on the only on the House bills. This is the Senate bill. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Stephen Gaffori. I'm sorry I'm late here this morning. I work a little slower in the morning these days, getting dressed. I'm representing the American Planning Association, Oregon chapter. We were involved in the work group along with Mr. Honeycutt. And Mr. Honeycutt did not agree. Sometimes when work groups occur, there is not consensus at the end of the process. But that doesn't mean that the work group didn't work and didn't work well. It just means that that's what happens in this game. Our chapter has supported this bill because we think it's important to have accuracy in notice. And I'd like to tell you just one little story. It's called Irvington Neighborhood in Portland, where I live. I bought a house there. The area is just north of Lloyd Center. About 1970, the neighborhood had been extraordinarily run down. People were moving out of it. Houses were decrepit. It was zoned at the present time as multifamily. And a few entrepreneurs were encroaching in the neighborhood, building some really ugly little apartment complexes, 10, 12 unit things, and that was decreasing the value of the rest of the neighborhood. The neighbors who moved in there, a bunch of so-called urban pioneers, young people, 30 years ago we were young people, moved in the neighborhood. And one of the things that we did was to ask the city to change the zoning to single-family zoning. The house that I bought in that year has increased about 15 times in value because of the fact that I can't put an apartment house on my land. Now, not everybody in that neighborhood can put an apartment house on the land. So if you zone a whole area and say nobody can put it in, you're not saying every single buddy is not going to, because you couldn't do it in the first place. It's similar to the cell tower zoning. No, you can't put a cell tower in there where you're not going to put 15 cell towers and 15 pieces of property. So even though somebody is restricted in the use of the property, it doesn't mean that their value is going to go down because that use is not a realistic use. So what happened in that neighborhood is it was enormously revitalized. Right now it's one of the prime neighborhoods. A house in my area, Mr. Chair, sells for the same price per square foot as a house on top of the West Hills right now. It's a very popular place to live, and that is largely because of the rezoning that happened. So it is possible you can rezone an area, limit the uses of the property, and have it increase. Thank you.
Bring away.
Thank you, Mr. Kapoor. Committee, at this point, this is the only remaining Senate bill that we have in our repertoire at this point, and we have two or three House bills that we'll schedule for Thursday. But at this point, unless we receive some more bills, Thursday will be pretty much a wrap-up meeting for us.
I heard they've got 300 bills on their voting list.
Probably something like that. So anyway, I just wanted to give you the what the schedule will be for Thursday. We'll try to wrap everything up on Thursday unless we receive some new information in that regard. I'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 516A and adjourn the committee on environment and land use.
Mr. Chair, I sure hope.